Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. And we also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us, and we welcome you to the show. Today is, what is today? Today's Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. And our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. You must be on mute. Let's give Michael a minute to get unmuted and get on here.
So you think I should open my mute button to be able to speak? Jeez, I don't know about you. Welcome, everybody, to the show. We're honored and delighted that you're here to be with us once more to deepen our understanding and our practice of this absolutely awesome ancient Aramaic teaching on the power of living a life that is based in first century Aramaic forgiveness. That is, living a life where if our mind is showing us things that do not match up with our human lives, and of course, people ask the question, what do you mean by human life? What is a human life? Hold a newborn child and you get an experience of this awesome, active presence of love. And when we're experiencing something that doesn't match that, what's happening is that in feeling things based in hostility or fear, we're losing awareness of the truth of who we are. And when we lose awareness of the truth of who we are, then we tend to get locked into thinking that what our mind is showing us is what's actually happening out there in our world. And the truth is that when we are looking at something in our minds based in hostility or fear, we're doing just that. We're looking at something in our minds based in hostility and fear. And those things that we see or think we see that are based in hostility or fear are actually constructs of the mind based in corrupt data. And so, in essence, what we're looking to do is to get to the point where we can set our lives up to see truly that which is true, that which is based in something other than corrupt data. And when we step into using the technology that deletes the things based in hostility or fear, then we get to a whole different experience. We get to play in a realm that is virtually unknown in the world. Why would that be? Why isn't everybody just experiencing what's really happening? Well, our last couple of days we've been talking about the idea that our eyes are not windows. We're not in here looking out through a set of clean glasses that show us what's happening out there in the world, although that's what the world by and large has taught us. Especially when there was upset or disturbance, the people who had power, more power over our lives than we did, delivered messages to us about ourselves that were based in their corrupt data, but presented to us as true information about us. For instance, we hear from people all the time, they were told they were stupid, they weren't good enough, they were never going to amount to anything, they were bad. We actually had one woman several years ago who shared in a workshop that when she was 6 years of age, her father came to her and told her that until she was born, that they had a perfect family, and when she came into the family, she destroyed the family. What a message to deliver to a six-year-old child. And those messages are delivered to us by people who really believe that what they're experiencing, what their perception is accurate about what they think they're looking at. When the truth is that you do not see through a set of mirror windows through our eyes, we do not look at the world that's actually out there. In fact, our perception is a very active process, and the activity of perception paints a picture, and I've been using the idea of this picture that it paints on the inside of our eyeballs, and when we look at those pictures, we think we're actually looking at what's out there. And the truth is, we are not looking at what's out there. We're looking at pictures that are generated, that are constructs, realities, from inside of us. And when I recognize that, then I have the opportunity to start to change those pictures. And what happens when I buy into the messages given to me by the power person that what they're saying, what they're seeing, what they're experiencing is true about me instead of about themselves, then I develop a belief that, well, they're looking at me, they're the authority, therefore they must be right. Until I can go back and recapture and remove those messages, I will tend to function as though those messages are true. But probably more important is I'll come to believe that I'm looking through windows and what I see is not a construct, but rather is actually what's happening out there. And what happens is that when hostility or fear is activated within us, we use the data in us based in hostility or fear to paint, so to speak, a picture on the inside of our eyeballs. And we use those pictures based in what we're feeling to justify our belief that those pictures are true. And we pretend then that those pictures are things we're looking at from the outside of us. When you really get the idea that everything that you feel is a result of something moving inside of you, and if it's not like the truth of who you are, then it's not going to support you experiencing yourself as who you are. When you don't experience yourself as who you are, then you start to make up stories about yourself, or you buy into the stories of the people around you. And then the next step is you buy into the stories that you make up about others based on the constructs that are inside of you. And in the first century Aramaic language, the man named Yeshua, he's popularly known as Jesus, but his name was Yeshua, had a set of tools, a technology for learning to discard the things that are not true about anything except the contents of my own mind, and collapse the input, the constructs that come from that corrupt data, so that my mind can start to serve for me true perception. And true perception will always be accompanied by the active presence of love. True perception, no matter what's happening in your world, no matter how terrible something is, if you're in true perception, or at least how terrible the world would say it is, if you're functioning from true perception, you'll stay connected to love. And your mind will not be constructing pictures, painting those pictures on the inside of your eyeballs, and convincing you that those pictures, which come from the corrupt feeling nature, are accurate about anybody other than you. The tool is called forgiveness. The result is you face everything from your accumulated database of information, which involves and includes many generations. You remove the corrupt data, and the only thing left in your physiology is that which supports the truth of who you are. You started out as, and you still are, this awesome active presence of love. But it's difficult to incarnate as love in a form that's filled with hostility or fear. And so as I face anything I feel that's based in hostility or fear and engage in the forgiveness process, I collapse that which creates the picture world that I see. The picture world that I see will always justify me. As long as I live in denial, the picture world that I see will always justify me believing that the feelings inside of me that are creating the pictures are creating accurate pictures, and of course, they're usually about somebody else. Collapsing that whole process gives me the opportunity to truly incarnate as an actual human being, as the actual awesome presence of love. And when I do that, everything shifts, everything changes. That's what we're here to support. And we're glad that you're here to be part of the process and to share this space with us each day that you are here. If you haven't engaged in or accessed the forgiveness process yet, we invite you to go to our website, which is www.whyagain.com. Whyagain.com. .org. Gee, I'm back to the .com again. Whyagain, whyagain.org. And in the middle of the page, you'll see a bullseye. When you click that bullseye will open a whole series of links that totally explains, gives you access to radio shows where we walk somebody through the forgiveness process and will support you in actually being able to put that process to work in your life. And as you do, life becomes a different game. Life becomes a totally and completely different process. So we're delighted that you're here to join us. Let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how that young man is today.
I'm doing well, thanks.
Awesome.
We had our support group last night, and we watched the fourth hour.
How'd it go?
It was very, very nice. It was beyond words good. That group is a testament to the power of loving people coming together and holding the space of love for each other as they work through issues, and there really aren't any words that would tap somebody into how truly wonderful that is. I'll just say that we watched the fourth hour of the lecture, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that prompted some very intelligent, probing questions about the process and about how we move toward awareness of our true nature. And then it was time to do a worksheet before we ran out of time, and nobody else had a pressing issue, so I did a worksheet. And I think I talked about a worksheet I did recently. I did it on having recurring thoughts about my ex-wife and having anger come up. And what had happened
right
since the last time I did that was on Sunday night, I was having a family dinner, and my son was there. And he mentioned that my ex-wife and her brother were going on a vacation trip with their father. There's just the three of them to reconnect. And I noticed that that stirred up some feelings in me, and so I wanted to do a worksheet on it. By the time I got to do the worksheet, I was aware that it was a feeling of sadness. So the sadness was because my sons lost that tight-knit family unit that we had going when my ex-wife decided to get divorced. And my goal for her was for her to work on her issues and to keep the family together. So when I went through the worksheet process and canceled my goal for her and asked to be shown the hidden part of my mind that was actually creating that deep sadness and that longing, I saw an image of pictures of the losses that had occurred in the years prior to our separation and divorce. And they included my ex-wife's grandmother, my father, within a year after that, my ex-wife's mother. All three losses occurred. And what I saw was, through this process, I could not help my ex-wife. At that time, she was my wife. When I would try and work with her, when I would try and do the energy techniques and release techniques that I knew that worked so well for me and they worked so well for the other patients I worked with, she couldn't go there or she wouldn't go there. And so the sadness I got in touch with in the worksheet was my sadness that I couldn't help her. I could help all these other people, but I couldn't help her. And I got in touch with that deep sense of longing to be able to bring her that joy, bring her the relief, bring her the loving feelings, help her through the grief. And I also had the realization that she wasn't raised in a family that gave her those foundational tools. She wasn't willing to go there, and there was nothing I could do about it. So I had quite a few tears and processed through that sadness and got loving support from people in the room. And then we were talking about by that point it was the end of the session. It was 9:10, and most of the people left, but a couple other people had a lot of stuff that had come up getting resonated from the worksheet I did. So we ended up staying and discussing things like the separation, the termination process, what I call saying goodbye to good people without saying goodbye to good memories. And then we did several rounds of the faster EFT tapping, and we didn't get done until 10 o'clock or 10 minutes to 10, whatever it was. But a lot of loving energy, a lot of sadness released, a lot of anger and frustration released, and a lot of loving memory and energies tapped into and spread around the room. And I just am sitting here with a lot of gratitude today for that whole process and that group of people and my joy at being able to attend that group each week.
Sounds powerful. Sounds like it was really powerful for everybody. That's pretty awesome. One of the thoughts that comes, and actually I'm going to do a worksheet on it from what you just shared. One of the thoughts that came up as you were speaking was that for me, the next worksheet that I could see for myself about sadness might be, you know, if I put myself in that circumstance, that perhaps some of my sadness might have come from the fact that somewhere I took on a belief that I wasn't good enough, that I couldn't do it, and that would be, you know, would fit for me as another loss of, you know, perhaps an earlier time, who knows, a 2-, 3-, 4-year-old trying to do something that, you know, you've heard me put forward the thought in the Healing Through Relationships workshop that the child who tries to fix it for the parent and can't do it makes up 4 things in their minds. It's my fault, I'm a failure, it's hopeless, and I'm helpless. And so it triggered for me a good worksheet that I'll be doing, and it might be worth just looking and see if that fits, or anybody who's listening, if that might be another, you know, one of those Hydra things that hides under the surface, because it, you know, at least surfaces that for me. So thank you.
Well, I had a full-blown your voice in my ears last night in the release for that, or discussing after the release in that worksheet, that very thing, that the helpless, hopeless, my fault, my blame. And I was aware of it last night, and I outlined several different worksheets last night. Even the discussion came up that somebody asked about several different, well, you just said this, does that mean a worksheet on that? And somebody mentioned the Hydra effect, so we did that last night. And then today, this morning, I was doing some more work, and I tapped into a memory from 3 years old, and this is a very, you know, a very frequent topic or target for my worksheets and my energy release work, things that went on between my father and I when I was 3 years old, because I was probably very, very sensitive and very, very tuned into energy and emotions. And my father had probably decided that his way of dealing with the death of his father when he was only 9 years old was that he would separate himself from his emotions of grief, and he would separate himself from anything but what his conscious, logical, and very, very intelligent mind could sort out for him. And I have... I had experiences later in life which let me know exactly how it might have gone if I was 3 years old and wide open and loving and seeing energies and seeing, you know, maybe the energies of people who've already passed, and went to talk to my father about it in any way that would have let him know that I have access to something he doesn't understand, and it would have been terrifying for him. And he would have pulled away from me. And so over and over again, we've gone back to when I'm doing my energy work around and worksheets around that time in my life, I chose to stay close to him and block out my ability to read energies, see energies, tap into my intuition, because it freaked him out when I would do that. So I had another round of work this morning that was, there were four different releases around that set of stuff, the idea of eventually tapping into, I didn't feel like I could ask for help, because if I would ask my father for help with sorting out the energies and emotions I was feeling, he couldn't do it. If I would ask the non-physical beings that were probably there to guide my intuition and feed me, I would have to separate from my father. So I didn't feel secure enough at three asking for help. Just another layer of releases that I got into today, fed by the last two worksheets I did on, you know, my mind telling me that my upset was caused by my ex-wife. Well, it's not caused by my ex-wife at all. It's caused by what I'm carrying around inside of me, and I'm still working at dismantling.
I hear you loud and clear. I hear you loud and clear. I opened the space and joined. You know, I shared last week a couple of worksheets that I did while Jeannie was teaching in the women's prison, and on my dad and some of the messages and some of the things that happened there. So I sure hear you loud and clear. And it's, you know, as you talked about your dad, the intelligence level, and my dad was in a similar position where, you know, he had this genius mind. And what was open for me in the worksheets I did last week was, you know, that if I didn't instantly comprehend what he had to say, then there was, you know, frustration and anger that was pointed in my direction, because after all, he understood it, so I should be able to understand it. So it's It's a kind of another variation on the theme, but one that, you know, we all get to carry itself at some level, and just tapping into those layers and moving up is pretty powerful. So
yeah,
very
my,
cool.
My awareness of the intensity prompts me to mention that it isn't, as you talk about so often in the healing process, it isn't Dr. Feelgood. However, it pays dividends. I end up feeling so much better, so much lighter, so much more flexible in my interactions with people after having done the work that, for me, it's well worth it. The effort pays.
Absolutely.
Dividends.
Yeah, beyond comprehension. Beyond comprehension. I doubt that we'll ever really understand when we do undo something like that, all the places that it impacts. It's just, it's beyond our comprehension, I'm sure. So I'm delighted to be part of your team and to have you on mine, and I certainly appreciate your support.
You have it.
All right, well, let's check in with Jeannie and see if we've got anything happening in the chat room that we should be aware of, or if there's anything, anybody with a hand up in the phone queue. Jeannie?
Michelle just wanted to know if Dr. Tim was breathing. She said that his voice sounded shaky as he was going through that.
Well, I don't know what the shakiness is coming through, but here I'm doing quite well. I processed quite a bit this morning. I'm feeling loved and solid at the current time, so thank you.
Awesome. And yes, we do have a caller with their hand up. We actually have two callers with their hands up. The first one is area code 517. You're on the air. Who do we have?
This is Tony from Lansing.
Hey there, sir. How do you be? Welcome. Good to hear your voice.
Very good.
You're on my list. You've been on my list to call for about a week and a half now, and I apologize. I haven't gotten back to you yet, but I will do it soon. We have a conversation
okay.
to have, but anyway.
All right. Sounds good.
So how can we support you today, Tony?
Well, today I'm just calling to share a movie that I saw this weekend. I think you'd be interested in, and maybe other listeners would be. It's called Force Majeure. It's a French movie, and we rented it on iTunes, and I'm sure you could rent it on Amazon. It probably wouldn't be at a local video store, but it's just such a great movie, and you know, last week you've been talking about critical mass, and to me it was just because it reflected the process so well, and I'll start out by what the movie is about. It's a family goes somewhere in the Swiss Alps or something like that, a ski resort, and they have an experience with an avalanche that triggers fear in the family, and the husband didn't react the way he would have liked to have reacted in the situation. So the rest of the movie is them dealing with what got stirred up with them, and then their friends get triggered by, you know, the sharing of the event, and the husband ends up processing later in the movie, and the children hold a space of love for the father. It's just the whole movie is just done so beautifully. The cinematography is great, and just the subtlety that he captures in the movie is just great. And I just wanted to share it.
Cool.
And the reason I bring up the critical mass is just because I just see this awareness, you know, in movies like that, and just, you know, other people in my life, you know, just seems like so many people are becoming more and more aware of the dynamics of their minds. And you know, one of the things that the movie I thought was good about it is it showed how the family's willingness, even though they don't have the tools that you provide, but they had the willingness, and so it showed
right.
what that willingness can do to help bring up and to own what's going on inside of us. So I just wanted to share that.
Cool. Well, I've looked it up on Amazon, and we'll check it out. We do have it there. Awesome.
Yeah, the last word is M-A-J-E-U-R-E.
E-U-R-E. Yeah, see ya.
Yep.
Cool. Fabulous, sir.
That's all I called about. I'll let you
How did it impact your process?
I think it brought up I think it's a theme that my wife and I have played for quite some time, and so it helped with our process, I think. I've done many worksheets around a similar kind of fear, and essentially the husband wasn't very heroic in his reaction to that. And then that brought up to the wife, her upset, and so I've experienced similar things between me and my wife, but I've done quite a bit of worksheets over the years around that kind of thing. So I don't think I was as triggered by the movie as I would have been in the past. So.
Right. Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you. We appreciate your input and your support.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Blessings. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And so our calling number is 646-200-4169. And we invite you to put that number into your phone, push the button, and then once you're on the show, you'll be listening to the show when you hit that. Once you're on it, then push one, and you're having a conversation with us. And Jeannie, you've got another caller?
Yes, we do. It's area code 828. You're on the air.
Hello?
828, welcome. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
Oh, hello? Yes, I know who you are.
You do.
How you doing, young lady?
This is Pat, and I'm in not in Wilmington. I'm north of Wilmington.
Right.
But went to Mindshifters last night with Susan, and the topic of honoring your parents came up. And,
right.
And so I wanted to get your kind of Aramaic take on what honoring your parents means.
Okay. Well, if we look at that whole passage, and you know, for me, recognizing that the ancient Aramaic scriptures are not about theology, they're not about religion, it's about life. When you look at that whole passage in the commandment, and there's a good reason why that's a commandment, and that is the result that's offered if you do it, where it says, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the earth. You know, usually our parents, one or the other of them, or both of them, serve as power persons. There were times in our lives where they were not functioning as love, and they had more control over our lives than we did. And in those spaces, we tend to take on their dis-ease energy and make it our own. So if I'm in a dis-ease state, it is the active presence of love that's going to heal that dis-ease state. Now, if I don't understand or have any knowledge of that commandment or how to live it, then what happens is I get in the presence of my parents. My disease moves, my anger, my fear, my rage, my guilt, my grief, my pain, whatever it happens to be. And out of that energy, I construct a reality, a picture that I, as I've been saying the last few days, paint on the inside of my eyeballs about how my mother makes me mad, my father hurts me, and my emotional condition paints a picture that justifies me blaming them for my emotional condition. But what I'm experiencing is something that's coming from inside of me, my dis-ease, my hostility, my fear, my rage, my grief, my guilt, is an energy that's held somewhere in my cellular structure and is literally destroying that tissue, destroying that cell. And so when I can, in the word honor, it's a different standard than the standard that's required for everybody else in the world. You know, if you go back to Yeshua and they asked him what's most important in the law, in essence they're saying, if I want to live a human life, what do I have to do? And he says you must have rachma when you think of the creator or neighbor, and neighbor means anybody that you think about. And this word rachma is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that allows human life, love, to enter. It's the gateway that human life enters into human form. So what he's saying is if you want to have a human life, you keep human life active in you no matter what's happening out in the world, no matter who you're standing in front of. Neighbor is anybody that you think about. But then there's this elevated standard for parents or those who served as parents, and that is to honor. It's different than rachma, and that is, it includes rachma. I'm going to keep that condition of rachma in my mind, but now, in this case, I'm required to bring that into behavior. So honoring means that in their presence, which of course means through resonance, my disease is resonating. If I bring active love into behavior toward them, I'm going to pass that active love through that part of me that holds disease. And by bringing active love through my disease, I heal my disease and my days get longer upon the earth. It's one of the most genius pieces of advice that was ever given. And, of course, we hear people scorning it all the time. Well, yeah, you know, well, that SOB, that father of mine, man, I'll never love him. He was just, we were actually in a retirement home back several months ago. There's a lady that we know who's in her early 90s and still teaching A Course in Miracles in Yellow Springs, Ohio. And she asked us to teach it. And there was a gentleman there who was in his 80s, and he just lambasted his father. His father was such a rotten SOB in the things he's done, and he would never forgive him. And then I explained the whole forgiveness process, and that here he was at 80, and his father's been dead for I don't know how many decades, and he's still in disease state. And he just kind of reeled back, went, oh, my God, look what I'm doing to myself. And this 82 or 83-year-old man, 85, whatever he was, I don't remember exactly, when he left the room, thanked me and said, I'm going to clean that up with my father because I realize here I am decades after he's gone and I'm still diseased. Wow, what an awesome gift to receive. So that would be my take. And what happens if I do it is I get to heal. My days get longer. They get healthier. They get to be more fun. I get to be more alive. Like, how do you beat that one? So it's one of the most practical pieces of input we could ever have if we understand it in its original context. And, of course, you know, when you recognize that ideas are transferred through words, if you don't have the accurate meaning of words, you can't transfer ideas. And if you look at Yeshua, you know, he gives us ideas of how to produce results. And so often, because we don't get accurate words, we can't produce the results, and that's when we become vulnerable to all kinds of fantasies and dogmas and doctrines that are plainly, totally based in fear and rage and guilt and grief and pain. And we buy them because, well, maybe this will produce the result because I'm not getting the results out of following the words I heard. Well, you know, if Yeshua sat in most churches in this country next Sunday morning or sat there last Sunday morning, he would probably say, this is all Greek to me. You're not going to produce the results I told you how to produce by listening to this Greek garbage. because relative to what Yeshua taught, the Greek culture, based in such rage and fear and grief and pain, just can't capture. You know, it's like it's the antithesis of being able to speak out of love when you think that heroism, and if you want to get a look at how long this has been going on in the Greek culture, sit with some worksheets and watch the movie 300. And this is, you know, a couple thousand years ago, and these people are expert at taking a young boy out of his mother's loving arms, and in the next scene you see this kid beating somebody's face in, and he's being molded into a hero. You can't capture with words based in this antithesis of love. You can't capture what the word love means and what the teaching means. And when we get back to the original Aramaic, you want to produce a result, you got to listen and understand the words, or you can't even logically think about what the person was speaking of, let alone produce the result. And so to me, that's the importance of going back and really comprehending the Aramaic. So does that make sense of your question, Patsy?
Yeah, it does. I sort of have a thing sitting on my head. I'm kind of new at all this, but in your workshop, you talk about codependence and the significant people in your life that. I forget what the phrase you used a while ago. How they influence you,
mm-hmm.
and the different ways that you react, whether they affect you as a and you want to control everything, or whether you want to please. And I forget the other one right now. I'm kind of in this world of trying to figure out what is pleasing and what is loving. What is, in other words, what is trying to keep myself from getting in trouble, you know, from the perspective of a little kid as well as an adult. And
right.
And what my motives are, if, you know, is my motive to just try to stay out of stickiness, or is my motive truly loving?
Well, the way you'll be able to tell is, do I stand as love in this situation?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
The way that you tell is, am I standing as a space of love in the presence of this situation? If I'm not, I may be trying to, I may be attempting to, but if I'm not feeling it through my physiology, then I've got work to do.
Well, sometimes I feel like the onus is on the person that sees the situation. And so sometimes I feel like I see what the situation is, and I see myself in it. And I guess I ask myself what's going to be accomplished, you know, if I behave in some other kind of way, and I don't see that the outcome is going to be so different. And so it's like I see the picture, and so I decide to just let it go. Does that make sense?
Well, and that's the whole idea of forgiveness. When I step into the process of forgiveness, I literally remove the energy through which I am perceiving this situation. And as I do, the energy changes. I get freed of it. And so we suggest that people change their definition of forgiveness. And whenever they think forgive, think remove rather than letting somebody off the hook. And when I start to remove what doesn't belong, I'm the one who gets free of whatever I'm holding on to. So you're right on track.
Well, I'm also thinking of that is true. And then there will come a time where I'm feeling uncomfortable, and if I speak up, or when I speak up, it can get more uncomfortable. And then my question is, okay, is it loving to myself to let this person continue in the way they're going? And you know, or do I speak up for myself? And
well,
and
my take
in the moment, sometimes that's really hard to figure out.
Well, my input would be that the first order of business is I want to be looking at what are the goals that I'm holding that cause my mind to recruit some sort of internal hostility or fear to build the picture of the world that I see, and cancel that goal to collapse the world that I see, and to have the courage to step out through the fear that's in me and to step out in a connected space of love with high quality goodwill and intentions that support me moving through, one, being able to forgive and heal what's inside of me, and two, being able to be the space of love for myself and those around me. And it's a process. It's not something that anybody's going to learn overnight.
Well, I think
that's why go ahead.
I was going to say, well, I think it is a process. I've been working on it, at least as an adult, since in my mind, at least later in my life, that I came to a different way of thinking about spiritual matters and relationships with others and what is loving. And have appreciated these tools because it's given another dimension, a whole other dimension to this active process of relating to others and self and creator. So, well, I thank you very much for this.
Thank you for
your program.
Glad to be on the team.
Well, thanks. We'll talk again.
Okay. Blessings. Thanks, Pat.
Bye-bye.
Six 646-200-4169. Push 1 if you're in the phone queue, and we'll be having a conversation. Jeannie, anything exciting happening in the chat room or anybody with a hand up?
Well, Dan has figured out how to join us in the chat room from Susan's. Michelle was with Susan in North Carolina, and they've helped Dan to get into the chat room. So I've been encouraging him to chat with us and to talk with us. But we also had Chris, who was with us yesterday and left the room, and we all encouraged him to go back and listen to yesterday's show that we had gone on and explained it in further detail after he left the show. And he was in a little bit of controversy again today, and he left the show. So he's getting it 10 minutes at a time, so he's building brain cells, and we held the space for him. At least he's coming back. And so anyway, we don't have another caller right at the time, so we've got 11 minutes. If somebody would press 1, you'll be first in line without waiting. And Michelle did say that she attended Susan's Mindshifter group last night and that it was really sweet. And so now she's awesome. An adopted participant to the group.
Fabulous.
Awesome. Well, we're glad you're there, guys.
Yeah.
So 646-200-4169 is our number.
We've got a hand up.
Cool.
The hand, area code 541, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, it's Julie from Ashland, Oregon. And
hey there, young lady, welcome.
Hi there. Thank you. I have my second support group meeting, it's my first support group. I only have one, actually. And but the woman is coming back after about a month. Her son got kind of crazy, and so she's coming back Saturday night. That's our meeting time. We just adapted to what worked in our schedule, and I'm excited about that. It feels good because it feels more according to my personal code and my commitment to myself. So just sharing that. If anyone else is in the Ashland listening area, there's going to be a support group meeting from 7 to 9 on Sunday or Saturday night this week. I heard of a book this morning called, what was it? It was more of a psychology approach, which I almost imagined someone in one of Jeannie's classes was learning from Jeannie, Michael Rice's work, and adapting it into a book that they could talk about using the tools without necessarily bringing up the, you know, credibility of what Yeshua was teaching. So it was more all in psychological terms. And it's called Taming Your Outer Child by Susan Anderson. And she hit on a few things, and it sounds like she has some tools where she works with groups to help bring out the unconscious driving forces that, you know, and the unconscious goals that drive behavior that shows up with the outer child, she calls it, and basically has resorted to calling the adult self as the one who builds new brain cells. So it's kind of interesting, and the inner child is the one with all the trauma and drama and conditioned patterns that are triggerable and uncontrollable, and the behavior follows that. So that's kind of interesting for me because I have a lot of that to work on. And basically the point she made that was interesting to me is she said they're really, as these theories and modes of processing evolved during whatever years that was, they kind of reached sort of a standstill or a place where they just didn't have a way to work. And she said it was because they were basically two voices, the inner child and the outer child, and there was no other voice to help alleviate and carry it further, like we have Ruka Dekutsha and all of Yeshua's teachings. So she actually, I think, was close to the same truth. I guess I'm bringing that up as a resource, possibly. I haven't researched it yet, to have as an adjunct if someone's doing this kind of work, and sort of the happiness that I feel that there's a maturing process in myself, so I'm able to see it in the world, that know that we're coming to some healthier ways of dealing with those things which are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I guess that's enough, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, and so,
well, you know, I usually, mm-hmm. When people start talking about the inner child, you know, we paint, again, this picture on the inside of our eyeballs about the way we want the world to be. And so if I can say, well, you know, I'm upset because of my inner child, I've got somebody to blame. I'm now dissociated again. Have I got thinking that I developed from when I was a child? For sure. And if I function out of the thinking that I developed when I was a child, then my behavior will appear or tend to be childlike. But I don't have me and an inner child. I have me and all of the thoughts and realities and constructs I've put in my mind all along. There's no child to blame. There's no childish or no child behavior. It's just what I hold that I construct my realities out of. I think there can be a stage where thinking in terms of the inner child might be useful. But again, it's a subtle form of dissociation. Like, well, there's me, and then there's this other guy over here that's this kid. When the truth is, if I'm functioning out of what I developed in thinking as a 3-year-old, That's me thinking like a three-year-old. I need to undo the dissociation from my three-year-old thinking, bring it forward in the presence of my cognitive mind, my conscious awareness, and the active presence of love, and integrate that into, sometimes I think like a three-year-old. There's no three-year-old in there. Sometimes I think like a three-year-old, and when I clean up my three-year-old thinking, then I can think like an adult.
That's good. I like that. Thank you. It's just a series of whatever configuration they have accumulated into. It's just thoughts. And so we're basically removing thoughts that are unlike love. And then it unravels, too, with the assistance of this higher space of love that we hold ourselves in. We learn to hold everything in that presence of love, and it just makes a big difference. It just does.
That's the idea.
And I never knew what that meant when I, years ago, was telling you about my friend Ed, who had cancer, and he was dying, and, you know, or maybe living. We didn't know what was going to happen. And you would say, well, just hold him in a space of love, you know. And I just didn't know what that was, because I hadn't really ever experienced, probably, a space of love. And through this work, especially at Heartland a couple years ago, in the group energy that helps, you know, there's something about that. I felt different. And ever since then, I know it's a direction I can move towards. So
yay! Yay, awesome.
There's a lot of confidence.
Yeah, and for anybody who's listening, when if you don't have the brain cells for what it means to hold a space of love, and, you know, maybe if Susan's out there, we've only got a couple of minutes, but maybe Susan could click in and share with us. There's a gentleman who's in her Laws of Living class who introduced himself in a particular way, and then within 3 weeks he's communicating to friends about how he's holding them in a space of love. If you're there, Susan, maybe you could push one and just share that with us firsthand. But basically, we're waiting to see if she can do that. Basically, this space of love is hold a newborn child, tap into the active presence of love that that newborn is, that I am. And as I do that, then I flood my cellular structure, I flood my mind, my awareness, my perception with the presence of this energy that I'm that is designed to fuel my mind and body and perception. And as I choose to step into that space of love, to hold that active space, what happens is, if there are parts of me that are based in hostility or fear, they tend to dissolve, and I get free of them. And it's just an awesome place to live and an awesome place to be. And we suggested people take that practice just, you know, 2, 3, 4, 10 times a day, tap into that sweet space of love, and let it flood your physiology. It'll change your world forever. In any event, is Susan there?
No, she's in the chat room. She's not on the switchboard. And we do have other callers.
Okay,
however, we're down to less than a minute now.
Yeah, we're down to less than a minute. So I'll just share quickly that there was a gentleman who was in her Laws of Living class and introduced himself as someone who didn't like himself or anybody else. And 3 weeks later, he's showing Susan texts. He's learning what that means, and he's showing texts. Gee, I've got somebody who's got a problem in my life, and here's the text I sent them. I am holding a space of love for you. It's like, whew, what a transformation. How cool is that? And, you know, imagine if we could just introduce that idea to 7.5 billion minds. And each person who engages in that idea and practices it is strengthening its presence on the earth. And through critical mass, that's what will be transferred. People will just start to discover this space of love in them and start to be able to live out of it. That's what we're here to hold. And so we appreciate each of you being here. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow, and give the world an awesome gift. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Be that space of love, and we'll look forward to talking with you tomorrow. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness.
Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.